This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Boys, put down your utensils. I want to talk to you about something real quick. If there's anything that you want to talk about, any kind of secrets, now's the time to put it on the table, okay? And if you tell me, we're not going to do that.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
I went to the petting zoo and I let the goat lick my honey.
Promise you wouldn't get mad, okay? They're being honest.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
One time I put a firefly on my butt.
Why?
To make my farts glow.
Oh, God.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
I touched myself to Drew Carey on the bus, right?
Okay, that's enough. Stop, please.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two. Dirt and Sprague here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. We'll get to Todd Husak at 1:45. He's the analyst for Stanford football on their radio broadcast. We will talk NFL true or false and get into that at 1:30. See how we did last week. What's true or false this week in the NFL? And Wisconsin has a COVID outbreak that has now put them to their fourth quarterback.
Not ideal, although great news if you're a Husker fan, because I think Nebraska plays Wisconsin this weekend.
Also great news if you got Nebraska at plus 10.
Oh, yeah, you're feeling good,
because that line's dropped now to one.
Although, who knows? Maybe their four-stringer is good enough to beat Nebraska. That is TBD.
That's a very good point. Nebraska did not cover the 26-point spread against Ohio State.
They did not.
I know it's in the middle of football season. I know the NBA kind of just wrapped up 3 weeks ago. But can we talk a little basketball?
I'm
quickly?
All for it, man.
The season might be starting in about 2 months.
I'd be all for that too.
Christmas Day.
Give me more sports. We were just talking before the show. If the Dodgers win tonight, the World Series is done. You're football only. That's it until whenever the next college basketball is. You know, going to hopefully get going here. But
November 25th.
Do we know what college basketball
is
doing?
It's kind of weird right now. Like, certain conferences aren't feeling, I don't know.
Weird.
I'm excited to watch that. I will watch college basketball. So, but you got about a month maybe until that begins for everybody. So, yeah, if you give me NBA in Christmas, I'm all for it.
But we got a draft coming.
And we
still have a free agency period. So the Blazers are going to be right back in some headlines.
Yes.
And they were on the latest Zach Lowe podcast. He had Bobby Marks on. Mm-hmm. Good friend of the show. Zach Lowe used to be too, and then he got really famous.
Yeah, he big timed us.
He stopped responding.
He won't come on anymore.
But they were discussing offseason storylines and player movement, etc. And they got into Gordon Hayward, who seems to be one of those, is he going to get traded? Now, the rumors are Sacramento, Indiana. He went to Butler.
I see it.
And Portland has kind of been tied to them a little bit. And here is what Zach Lowe and Bobby Marks had to say about Gordon Hayward to Portland.
I really like the fit of Hayward in Portland. If I could make a deal with Portland that worked and Ariza plus Hood plus Zach Collins doesn't quite get the salaries there to the level that's legal, but it's close. And then if I'm Boston, I'm probably, because Ariza is going to be gone for me next year, Hood might be gone for me next year, I'm really just trading for Collins, and I have to be really bullish on Collins as probably my future five to make that deal, or maybe someone can play with Time Lord. I might have to get a draft asset along, maybe a protected first round pick or something along with that. I think that's an interesting one, but I couldn't make it work, Bobby. I couldn't crunch the old numbers.
Well, it works when if you did the sign and trade route.
It does work.
If you have Hayward at, like, let's say 25.
Oh, I signed him for less.
Let's say you have him at 25 and you add, you know, with those you know, with Hood at 6 and Collins at 5'4", and then Ariza at 12'8", and Ariza contract would have to become guaranteed now to make, you know, to make the money work. You're there.
So it goes into a sign and trade situation. Zach Collins, Trevor Ariza, a protected pick. Are you going in on that Hayward?
No, I'm not. I think Gordon
also,
Hayward.
Also, why would Boston want that?
Just to get out of the end of the Gordon Hayward deal. I think he's got one more year on his contract. By the way, for those that are keeping track at home, he is scheduled to make $34 million this year.
Player option, yeah.
And he's not going to opt out of that because he's been injury riddled and nobody's going to give him more than $34 million on the open market right now. So you would only be getting him for 1 year unless what Bobby Marks is saying. It's a sign and trade scenario. And you extend it, you know, further on top of that for, I would hope, less than $34 million. Financials don't really make sense because I don't know how you make this work and fit that contract in. And no, I'm not willing. Like, I get the Collins thing. I'm not sold on him. And I think he's been incredibly disappointing through the first couple of years of his NBA career. But if you're going to go Ariza and Hood, doesn't that kind of combine you into a Gordon Hayward? So I think you're
losing two.
You're losing
two
wings.
Yeah.
You're getting one. Yeah. One. You know, I don't know. I'm out on that one. I think Gordon Hayward, in a perfect world where he's not making $34 million and you don't have to give up three players and a protected first round pick to get him, would be a great fit with Dame and CJ and a great fit in a Terry Stotts offense. He's like an actual better version of Evan Turner for what they want, a guy that can handle the ball and run the offense a little bit. But not at the price tag that it's going to cost you.
I think it's got to be a no for me, dog, because
no for Z Doggy over there.
I think I'm going to have to vote no on the Z Doggy deal. It's not because of Collins. I actually couldn't care less about
trade Collins
him
all
as
you
an
want.
Asset.
Go ahead, man.
If you want to get rid of him and it brings somebody else in, I am all for it. I'm not going to be the one to stand in your way. I think he can get a little better, but I am really getting close to the point where. You get injured again, and I'm just, it's kind of just who you are.
Yeah, we're getting into the Myers-Leonard territory of how many years are we going to say this is the year it's all going to put together.
What year? Seven.
Oh, no,
it's year seven's going to click.
This is the year.
But the Gordon Hayward thing, I don't know how much you trust it because of what you say. Like, he's injury prone.
Yeah.
Do you want to, and by the way, is Dame CJ and Gordon Hayward, is that beating any of the dominant teams in the West?
No, I wouldn't have that.
You could throw Nurkic in there too, and I get that, but let's see what Nurkic is going to be this year too. I think the game, the what was it? The it would have been, how many games did he end up playing? 10?
Last season?
Yeah, when he came back.
Well, he only played, there were 8 in the regular season. He didn't play any before that, so because he didn't return. They shut down the league before he returned, so he only played the 8 restart games plus
okay, so it'd been 13.
Playoffs.
So he played 13 games,
yeah.
And that's fine. I thought he played well, but let's see what the season's going to be like, the longevity of the season from start to finish whenever they end up doing that. I just, you know, you get creative, sure. I don't know is that move really going to move the needle? It's a nice little trio, but I don't know if you're in the top 3 or 4 of the West with that.
No, and then also if you're signing and trading it, then you got an extra big contract that's on your books, because sure, you maybe get him extended for less than $34 million, but it's not going to be south of like 25.
Your bulk of your cap is then devoted to Dame, CJ, and Gordon Hayward for the conceivable 3 to 4 years.
And Nurk is creeping up on the point of needing another new contract after a couple of years, so I'm going to be out on that one. I think if you're going to make a swing like that and you're going to bring in a big salary, I would rather see a different kind of swing.
And I have one.
Oh, okay. What's your other swing?
Here's the other swing.
Okay.
There is a man in Orlando that has been bantered about before involving CJ, and they dove into this one too on the Low Post.
They've been linked a lot to Aaron Gordon, and the CJ McCollum for Aaron Gordon fake trade has been an NBA Twitter favorite. I don't see them ever. I don't think that was ever even like remotely real. I don't think there was a phone call in which that was discussed in any real way. But I wonder if Gordon's value has dipped to the point, and I do think it has dipped despite a nice run after the All-Star break for him, if it's gotten to the point where, again, you got to be a big believer in Zach Collins or Anthony Simons or somebody like that. If Portland could get him without trading either Dame, obviously, CJ or Nurkic, I like that. I just think Portland has a move to make that makes their team click a little bit for next season, and I think they need to click a little bit. With given how good the West is going to be next.
Yeah.
I'm all for that. All for that.
You trade? Would you trade Ant for him?
Yeah, I would.
Because they're rolling Augustine and Fultz right now.
Yeah, it's a move that I think you can have it make sense for both teams, right? Orlando, they're not going anywhere currently constructed. Aaron Gordon's probably not going to be a part of a title team for the Magic. So you give them a couple of young assets. You clearly have to make the salary situation match.
Right.
That to me makes sense for both teams. You give Orlando a future pick plus a guy like Anfernee Simons. The Blazers get somebody in return.
Gordon's a good
play right away.
I think he's a good defender.
That's exactly what you're looking for. He's got 2 years left on his deal. Both years, this upcoming season, he's scheduled to make $18 million. The following season, it's $16 million. So that's half of the contract of a Gordon Hayward. And you know, offensively, he's not going to fit in terms of being able to spot up shoot. He's not a good 3-point shooter. But he's a guy that can give you 15 points per game. That's kind of what Gordon Hayward is. He's not going to handle the ball as much as a guy like Gordon Hayward, but you bring up the defense, and if you can improve on that side of the ball, get a bigger body on the wing that helps out Dame and CJ, I'm all for that kind of move. If you give up a young asset, maybe one of your other contracts, a Trevor Ariza type deal, if you can swing it, and then a future pick for a guy like Aaron Gordon, I would love that deal.
You know, I think Lowe's overall point, though, matches that of a lot of Blazer fans. There feels like there's a move there, but it's just a matter of are they going to pull the trigger and create a roster that maybe puts them in a better position. I don't know if I follow the logic. He also said in that pod, by the way, they'll be lucky to make the playoffs. He might be right. It's not like they were sitting pretty before the shutdown. They were actually pretty awful.
How healthy are they going to be, though? Yeah. That's a big part of it for me.
Hood back,
yeah,
right?
But Nurkic is going to play the entire season. You would hope that Zach Collins stays healthy, right, if you bring the team back. I'm not acting like Portland's a title-constructed roster, but I feel like we do this every year with the Blazers. Last year was the outlier again because they had Hood went down. I mean, you had to bring in Carmelo Anthony 8 games into the season because you were a sinking ship. So let's be fair to what their circumstances were last year. And in years that they stay healthy, Dame finds a way into the Western Conference playoff picture, usually higher than what we all thought coming into the season.
Yeah, we got one person that says, Zach only got his first chance to start last year. What is he, year 3? I think this would be year 4 for him, right?
I think he's going into year 4.
I think this is going to be year 4. He kind of broke out in the Western Conference Finals or the Finals?
No, I would argue that was the Denver series that he broke out.
No, this person's saying the Western Conference Final year. I think it's the Denver series what they're
citing. The Denver series, he had a great series, and then he kind of disappeared against the a lot of the team disappeared.
Only injured last year, otherwise has been healthy, not nearly a Myers. No, I'm not saying he's going to be Myers. I think he can be more talented than Myers. But I believe he has suffered shoulder problem, right? And then he had an ankle problem, didn't he? He's getting banged up a couple times.
He's had a couple injuries lingering. He had the injury, obviously, early in the season last year, and then he came back in the bubble and he got hurt again when they desperately needed him against the Lakers. This is just the truth of the NBA, man. You're going into year 4. He's going to be 23 years old.
It is year 4.
You get 2 years of a grace period, especially as a guy who probably shouldn't have come out of college when he did, and he wasn't ready necessarily to play in the NBA right away.
Picked top 10.
He was, and financially, it worked out great for him. So, I'm not going to hold your feet to the fire 2 years in. And last year, undoubtedly, it's not his fault that he got hurt early in the season and then again in the restart. But there were moments even in the restart where he didn't really seem to click. He didn't seem to fit. He seemed out of place. We were all expecting that to be this huge boost to the roster. What was Nurkic coming back from injury. Nurkic looked ready to go and showed you again why he's a perfect fit with Dame and CJ. Collins didn't really show you that. This is the year for Collins. And I think your point is if he gets hurt again, well, now we're doing this again. He's going to miss another season. And if he doesn't play well and he stays healthy this year, then I'm just kind of out on that one, man. Yeah. Like, you're year 4, you're 23, 24 years old. If you're not ready to contribute at a consistent level in the NBA after 4 years, maybe you go somewhere else and it clicks. Maybe in year 5 or year 6 it clicks. But the overwhelming number of cases show if you can't pan out in the first 4 years, it's not going to end well for you.
I think Collins or no Collins, I think overall my feeling has kind of largely been you're going to have to – I just view it – they're going to have to make a move. Right. If you want to put Dame in a better situation, put the team in a better situation, I don't look at that. I don't look at the roster and say you're better than X, Y, and Z in the West. I think you could be good. I think you could be like a 6 seed, have a nice little season. I don't know where that leads you. Golden State, by the way, coming back.
Yeah.
They're going to be maybe better than you. I just the reluctance to make a move. It's interesting.
Well, and we don't know if that's there yet, at least this offseason.
Well, yeah, you're right.
It has been in the past, and but we
also
don't know about this.
We also don't know. Maybe he's tried to make moves, and teams have just said, I don't want Rodney Hood. I don't want Zach Collins.
Right, I don't want that CJ contract. I'm not touching that thing.
Well, I largely don't think he's throwing CJ out on trade market. Sure. But the point is, whether he has or he has not, or what they're going to do, I'm kind of in that mode. Like, this has been basically the consistent. Is there a first-round... Maybe second-round team largely. And
right. Make a little noise and your flame gets put out.
Make a move.
I'm with you.
It's okay to make a move.
I'm with you. The pie in the sky take, I know we're up against it. The pie in the sky take for me, too, not even that this creates it, puts you into the championship category, but there have been some articles out there, and one of the players that has spoken out about this is a guy like Danilo Gallinari. And there's this sentiment out there that a lot of guys in the NBA are going to be willing this offseason to sign cheaper short-term deals just because there's not a lot of money to be spent, and we don't know what the future of the NBA looks like. And, you know, a guy like Gallinari came out and did an interview a few weeks back and said, man, I don't really care about how much money I'm going to make. I'm a first-round pick. I made a lot of money in my career. I'm going to go play someplace that's a good fit and puts me in a chance to compete. And I think that's the pie in the sky take, at least for Portland, because you don't have a lot of money to spend this offseason, is that maybe you pick up one or two guys that are like that say, man, hell yeah, I'll come in on the mid-level exception, play with Dame and CJ for a year, see if I can up my status, and maybe that improves your roster in the short term.
It's an exciting thing to think about, there's no doubt, because we could be 2 months away from the season starting. We still have the draft. We can get into that a little bit in a few weeks. A
couple of weeks away, man. It's exciting.
There's a lot of mocks out there of where they could be looking, and then free agency is going to start in probably early December at some point. So we have all that, and then the season could be 2 months away. So the Blazers mentioned on the Low Post podcast, interesting conversation between him and Bobby Marks involving either Gordon Hayward or an Aaron Gordon scenario here in Portland. Don't know how realistic it is, but an interesting conversation nonetheless. All right, let's get back into football. Wisconsin, boy, COVID's kicking their ass. We'll get into that next on The Fan. We'll get to Todd Husak at 1:45, get a Stanford preview. We've got NFL True or False coming up, but this Wisconsin football story is, boy, it sucks for them.
Yeah, it does.
So Graham Mertz steps in for Cone, Jack Cone, I think is his name, and Mertz is a four-star quarterback, a redshirt freshman, and a lot of people at Wisconsin were excited because they thought they finally had like a top-end quarterback to go out there and win a Big Ten title.
Their quarterbacks have been awful since Russell Wilson.
It's really what's held them back.
Yeah. Remember Hornibrook?
Hornibrook, yeah.
Remember how bad he was? God.
So Graham Mertz steps in against Illinois, and he throws, I think, five touchdowns, just absolutely torches Lovie Smith and company, and everybody gets super excited about what they can do.
You know, they have one incompletion.
They had Nebraska on the schedule for this week. Well, then the next day, Graham Mertz tested positive for COVID, and he had to take a PCR test, which is something the Pac-12 is also doing. That's part of the antigen testing deal. And that basically will just confirm if it's a true positive, and indeed it is. And so Graham Mertz is now officially out on quarantine for 21 days. They lost their redshirt freshman four-star quarterback. Damn. Well, they got a backup. His name is Chase Wolf. And a lot of people were, they still think that he can win.
Chase Wolf, what a name.
Until he tested positive for the coronavirus. So now Chase Wolf, their third string, Graham Mertz, their second string, and Jack Cone, their first string quarterback, are all out. Two because of COVID, one because of an injury. They are going to their fourth string quarterback at Wisconsin this week.
Come on down.
His name is Danny Vandenboom.
You better put that guy in a bubble the next couple of days. Make sure nothing happens to him.
Danny Vandenboom.
Love it.
This is great.
He's
it's so good.
He's going to be Vandenbooming all over Nebraska Saturday.
Right, he will. he might be their quarterback for the foreseeable future. They're waiting the PCR results for Chase Wolf. If he has it, that's going to be two guys out at least 21 days.
Yeah.
So that means Danny Vandenboom will be taking the reins against Nebraska and Lincoln, Purdue at home the following week, and then you go to Michigan on November 14th with a fourth-string quarterback.
Good luck with that. Look, this sucks.
It really does suck.
I feel for a Wisconsin fan in this nature. I will say I appreciate the way Paul Chryst has handled it. He's been supportive of the policy. They understood what they were getting into. This stuff was known as the year began, and it's something that I'm now going to try and focus on doing because the Pac-12 has not begun begun playing yet. But once they do, I want to make sure I'm clear on the protocols, because I guarantee this is going to happen in one of the Pac-12 schools. You're going to have a kid that tests positive, and I would assume that their sit-out rate is 21 days as well. And we're going to bitch about it, but we know the rules going in, and this is the way that it's set up. The Big Ten is trying to be as cautious as they possibly can, and I understand that. That has been my take basically throughout COVID, is I would rather have institutions, teams, companies, whatever, I would rather be overly cautious and then look back and say, yeah, we probably didn't need to go that far, but I'm glad that we played it safe to make sure everybody was okay, than saying, ah, what the hell, the most of these kids end up being all right anyways, let them play, it's no big deal. I can appreciate taking that route. You know, one of the guys that ranted about this yesterday, who I actually really like, Pat McAfee's great. I think he does a great show. I don't listen to it regularly, but he...
It's a YouTube show. You can go find it.
He's got clips and interviews and stuff that pop up all the time. He cracks me up, man. He does a great job. But he went on a rant about this yesterday, and I just had to disagree with it slightly, because it was basically like sounding like this is the end of Graham Mertz's career. Like, he's 3 weeks is ridiculous. How's he going to go to the NFL now? How's he ever going to recover from this? Like, dude... Let's take a deep breath for a second.
He's also a redshirt freshman.
He's a redshirt freshman. He's 19 years old, first off. If he ends up missing 3 games, how many is the Big Ten playing this year? 10?
10.
All right, so you're still going to potentially have 5 games at the end of the season that he can play in as a redshirt freshman. He's going to be back next year. Like, his career is not over by this. I just think, whether you think it's too far or not, these are the rules that are in place, and we can complain about them all we want, but they're not going to budge on it. They gave him an extra test to make sure that it wasn't a false positive. He tested positive again. They want to make sure that he's going to be okay, study him, make sure the heart stuff's all figured out over the next couple of weeks. Like, if this is going to frustrate you, I would argue, view it as like a high ankle sprain. He's going to have to go on IR for 3 weeks, and then he's going to be back. Because if a guy gets hurt in that regard, nobody complains about him not being available for the next couple of games. That's the case at Wisconsin. It sucks for Wisconsin fans, but that's just kind of the state of college football in 2020.
So I'm going to ask you a question that I don't know. There could be an answer, because I don't know if I would have said this was possible for Wisconsin until they got to this point. Who is the fourth string quarterback for the Ducks?
Well, they have the Tyler Shuck and Brown, who are vying for
those
the job.
Top two.
You have Jay Butterfield, the freshman that came in, that's actually played pretty well, I've read, so far at camp. He's turning some heads.
Okay.
And then Robbie, who is the other?
Robbie,
who's the other football? Or Robbie Ashford, who was the other recruit that they had.
And is he was a freshman?
He's a freshman as well. Ooh. So they have two other freshmen. There might be another kid on the road. Oh, they also, I think, still have the, is it Cade? Who's the... Oh, God.
Cade McNown.
I got to look
Junior.
Up. Let me look up the roster. He was he's the Husky legacy.
Oh, Millen.
Millen, yeah. Cade Millen or Kale Millen or whatever the hell his name is. Yeah. He's there, too. I think they got 5 guys on the roster.
Is it Kale Millen?
It's Kale. Cade? Kale.
I think it's
Cade. Hold on. I'm pulling up the roster.
I'm going to go Cade. Final answer.
Final answer? All right, hold on.
I was actually surprised we haven't seen him yet.
He was hurt last year, and
because it hasn't gone well for him so far.
He last year was his freshman year. They redshirted him obviously because they didn't need him. And then I had heard some things about just he didn't quite click right away.
Yeah.
And then the injury didn't help. I'm pulling up. I'm sure it's already been texted in. Pulling up by position. Hold on, I got to scroll all the.
You just type Cade Millen, it'll probably autocorrect.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, very true. Hold on.
Now I don't even care.
Well, now we got to figure this out, man. Hold on. It's Cale Millen. That is what it is.
Boy, you get to that situation, you're just, well.
Is that a Pan Pam? Pan N. There's a N in there. It's Cale Millen.
They can help with this whole Pan Pam
situation. So those are their, they have 5 quarterbacks. So, and look, this is going to end up happening, I guarantee it, with a Pac-12 team.
Fourth string quarterback?
I wouldn't be shocked, man.
God, the odds of this are totally against you for that to happen.
Well, and you hope for Wisconsin's case that this, the daily testing again keeps them from having a widespread outbreak and they can continue to play, because the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have no wiggle room. There are no rescheduled dates. So you miss games, you're not making them up this season. So that's, I think, what everybody is trying to avoid, and you're hoping the daily testing will avoid for football teams. But it sucks, man. I'm viewing this as, what's the best way to make sure that these guys are safe long? They're amateur, unpaid athletes. And yes, 99.8 or whatever the hell the percentage end up being perfectly fine. Just in case something happens, I'm all for being overly cautious. It sucks in the short term, but this kid, I'm sure, will thank him later.
So Wisconsin's down to their fourth string quarterback this week at Nebraska, Danny Vandenboom.
Danny Vandenboom.
As their third string, Chase Wolf, tested positive for COVID, and their backup, Graham Mertz, tested positive for COVID. Mertz also tested positive on the PCR test, so he'll be quarantined and out for 21 days. Good luck to Wisconsin this week against Nebraska. That would be a bad look for Scott Frost if they can't win that game.
Yeah, that's you get blown out in week one, and then you can't beat Vanderboom, Vanderpump rules. You can't beat him in game two. It's not good.
All right, we got NFL true or false. We got Todd Husak just around the corner at crunch time. We got the mail sack at 2:15, so get those questions in. But NFL true or false is next.
Welcome back in, 1:31. We'll talk to Todd Husak coming up here in about 15 minutes. Get a preview of Stanford. That's Oregon's first game. Having some back and forth on Twitter about there was a metric that came out about Oregon's offense last year as opposed to what the Chargers are doing with Herbert this year.
Yeah, there was.
It was pretty eye-opening, man. Pretty eye-opening.
I'm out to the author of that story for tomorrow.
Yeah, so I'll give you those numbers coming up at some point in the final hour as well. We'll get back into the World Series. And don't forget the mail sack is coming up in the final hour. So get those questions in. 503-250-1080 is where you can send them in. Sports and non-sports related. Let's get to NFL true or false, though. Take a gander at last week, ladies and gentlemen. Guess what? I had a really bad gambling weekend. But my true or false success held true. The good news, though, is that we all tied. We all went 3-1.
Would you rather have a good gambling weekend than a bad true or false?
I'd rather go 0-4 every weekend than true or false because there's not money on the line. The Bills couldn't score a touchdown against the Jets. How?
Oh, man. Well, what did we get right? What did we get wrong?
Still can't believe that game. The Titans will be the last remaining undefeated team in the AFC next week. We all got that right. False. The Pittsburgh Steelers won that game.
Yeah.
Next one up, the Raiders. It was something about beating Super Bowl teams. The Raiders would be the third team to beat three Super Bowl teams with winning quarterbacks, all whatever, blah, blah, blah. Swigart and I said true. That was false. They did not win the game. They did have all their offensive linemen back, so I'm not even going to use that as an excuse. They couldn't stop Tom Brady. All four teams in the NFC West will have a winning record after this upcoming week. The only game that was on the line for that was the 49ers and Patriots.
Oh, I said this was false.
Yeah, Swag and I got that one true. That was the only one you missed, Sprague. And then we all got the last one right. The Chiefs will again rush for more yards than they throw for against the Broncos. They threw for 185 and rushed for 101.
Hmm.
We all said false on that one. Wasn't a great offensive performance necessarily from them, but they didn't really have to be because they got a defensive and special teams touchdown.
That's 14 points.
Boom, boom, boom.
There was snow.
There was snow.
Well, you know, there wasn't the start of that. It kind of went away.
Denver's best unit is their defense.
Yeah.
By far.
Which is troubling considering you have a young quarterback that you're hoping is the franchise.
All right, first up. In each of the last four seasons, the Seahawks and 49ers have played at least one game decided by a field goal or less. Seattle opened as 3-point favorites this week. True or false, this Sunday's game will be decided by more than a field goal.
I'm going to say false on that one. I think it's going to be a low... not low-scoring game. I meant to say close game. I'm all over the line. I'm a little worried about the continual injuries for the 49ers as Wilson's out and Deebo Samuel's now out for a couple of weeks.
Oh, my God, I know.
It's like, dude, they just cannot stay healthy.
Nope.
But I think the 49ers are playing with some serious momentum right now. I think they got a little bit of their swagger back. And Seattle's leaking a bit of oil. I mean, that last game they played was against Minnesota 2 weeks ago. They didn't look great in that game until a last-second comeback. And then they, you know, had that weird one on Sunday night against Arizona that they really had no business losing, but they ended up losing. So I'm going to say that this ends up being false. I think it will be a close game, and I kind of like the Niners plus the three.
There is a theme that I'm going with against San Francisco all year, and I am not going to stop now. No Deebo. Your running backs are completely depleted. I've seen no update that says Richard Sherman's coming back.
They might have Tevin Coleman back this week, though.
Maybe. They also lost Jimmy Ward.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, I think Seattle's going to get a get-right game here. Their defense is not good, but Jimmy G is capable of being just bad enough to where that defense looks okay.
Was Jamal Adams coming back?
He was close to the Arizona game. I'd have to wait on that. If he's back,
I think that makes a big difference.
I'm taking Seattle here to win by more than a field goal. And also, Robert Saleh's defenses, they really struggle to contain Russell Wilson, and especially with no defensive line. It's been ravished. I think Seattle's going to win this one by a touchdown.
I'm going to say this is true. I'm not sure. I could see either team's defense taking advantage of things. I don't expect Russell Wilson to throw three picks again, or however many
I do not either
throwing. So, but yeah, I think with all of the injuries on both sides of things making it very difficult, there's a potential for lots of unique offense, maybe some defensive scores.
I think somebody pulls away in this one. Number two, the Jets opened as 22-point underdogs to the Kansas City Chiefs for this Sunday's game. New York has never been that big an underdog in the Super Bowl era. True or false, the Chiefs will beat the Jets by at least 20 points this Sunday.
True.
I'm all over it. It's in Kansas City, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's at home against Kansas City.
Now, on the lottery scoreboard, it's already come down to 19.5.
The Jets played their best game last week, and they still almost lost by 10. Kansas City is getting it dialed in now. They had a bit of a slow start, but we're still okay record-wise.
Yeah, without two missed field goals, they'd lose by 2 touchdowns without allowing a touchdown. They still would have lost by 14.
It's crazy.
Yeah, the Jets suck, man. It's amazing to see this big of a point spread in the NFL.
Take it, baby.
I've never, 20-point line in the NFL, this is some Alabama versus the Citadel stuff.
Yeah, this is rare.
But this is embarrassing.
I'm all over it, man.
The last 20 times it's happened in the NFL, I was reading, teams are 0-20 straight up, but the underdog has covered 14 of the 20 times.
Have they ever seen Sam Darnold play?
What? Adam Gase still the coach? The Jets?
He is still there.
Defense still just horrid.
No, this is true. The Chiefs might win by 30.
Honestly.
I might even put that in Sprague in the line this week. That was the only pick I got right last week. Why were they only favored by 9 against Denver?
I didn't get that either.
What am I missing here?
You tell me that it's Chiefs 35, Jets 10.
They're not going to score more than 14 points against them. So then to get the cover that 19.5 or whatever it ends up being, you got to hold them below 35? That ain't happening.
Oh, man.
Next up, Tua Tagovailoa set to make his first NFL start this weekend. The Dolphins taking on the Rams. He'll be the third rookie to start at quarterback this season. True or false, Tua will surpass the averages of Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert for completion percentage at 67% and passing yards at 289 and 308, respectively, this Sunday against the Rams.
False. Could do the percentage because they do a lot of little check down dump passes.
They better do it because you're facing Aaron Donald.
And Tua could prove us wrong here. We know he's got a cannon, but I don't see him throwing for 308. I think they're going to try to slowly get him going. And I could be wrong, but I don't see either of those scenarios both happening.
No.
I'm going to go with only one or maybe none.
Yeah, this is false to me. I hope he stays healthy. That's the only thing I hope to with this week. Keep him upright because we just saw what that Rams defensive line could do last night. But, yeah, to ask for that kind of game in your opener against a good defense, not happening.
I will say false, too. If he has to throw, if they can't run against the Rams, he's got to throw for over 300. There's no way his completion percentage is up above 67%. And finally, for the first time since week 2 of 2015, the Patriots will be a betting underdog in an AFC East divisional game, ending a streak of 30 straight regular season games as the favorite. True or false, the Bills will cover the 4-point spread this Sunday against New England.
Guys, what's happened to the Bills, by the way?
Yeah, what's going on there, man? That's weird. They went from being an unstoppable force on offense to not scoring a touchdown against the New York Jets.
I used to get tweeted at about my Josh Allen take from 3 years ago. Haven't had a tweet in 3 weeks.
I mean, they've been a little quiet, haven't they,
Yeah, Bills Mafia really gets quiet when things aren't going well.
The good news for the Bills is their division sucks. It's just kind of opposite now because New England sucks.
Why is it only 4?
That line makes no sense to me.
That scare you a little bit?
It totally scares me, and I'm going to put my hand in that trap, and it's probably going to bite down on me.
They couldn't score a touchdown against the Jets.
Did you watch the Patriots?
The Patriots last 2 weeks have maybe looked like
Cam Newton can't throw a football 10 yards anymore. He is bad.
Yeah, his shoulder looks messed up.
Dude, we're back to Cam Newton that isn't a good athlete like he used to be anymore, and he can't throw the football, which is not a good recipe for him. So because of the Bills' defense, I'm going to say they
supposed
can win by
to
a touchdown.
Be horrible in Buffalo yet? I mean, that's
could be.
I mean,
is that where it is? Is in Buffalo?
It's in Buffalo.
Maybe.
It's cold.
I'll pull up Buffalo's weather.
I'm going to go true. This is true. This is an FU game to the Patriots for their supremacy reign of the AFC East.
Sunday's 51 and a little bit of rain.
That's perfect weather to throw bombs to Diggs. I think they're going to light him up. I'll take the Bills minus the 4, but I am nervous as all hell on it.
Yeah, I'm going true, too.
I'm going to go false. I think...
That'd be quite the turnaround for New England if they cover that spread.
Yeah, I think they're going to make it even uglier than we think it could possibly be.
The Niners were an underdog on Sunday. They were a 3-point dog.
Well, but I gave them a shot to beat the Niners. I thought that was realistic. And then I saw that same performance they had against Denver, against San Francisco.
Yeah, it's back-to-back weeks.
When you say how are they going to make it ugly? They can't run the ball. Yeah. They don't have any wide receivers. It's either Cam or Stidham, and I don't know how much you trust that. I haven't liked what I've seen from Buffalo. I just don't know in what conceivable way is that defense suddenly going to stop anybody, and what are they going to do on offense?
Yeah.
They have no weapons.
It's not pretty right now in New England, man. Not pretty.
Who's their best player? Old-ass Edelman or James White?
And Edelman's been banged up
all
year,
too. Banged up.
Yeah. See? Or Matthew Slater, but right. He's only great on punt coverage.
Matthew Slater, man. Don't knock Matthew Slater.
The Bills are not great the last 3 weeks. That was an eye-opening ass-kicking in New England. That's not something you see with a Belichick team.
No.
And I don't know what's going to change for them to suddenly be able to stop some of the horses that Buffalo has.
Yeah, the only argument I would make for Buffalo, I think, to be fair to them, their first two losses of this stretch of not playing good football. The first one was against Tennessee, who's a damn good team, and then they lost at home to the Chiefs, who might end up winning the Super Bowl again. So I'll give them the benefit on those losses. The only thing I could think of against the Jets is that they were like, hey, we're playing the Jets, and they didn't really come in with their A game.
You can't do that, though.
I know you can. That's the only way I can, ratify it in my mind of how they can't score a touchdown against the worst team in all of football, because it doesn't make any sense. I do think it's a get-right game for Buffalo, because New England's beat their ass for how many years now and won that division for how many years, and it's probably let's let a can of whoop-ass out.
I think they have won 18 of the last 20 division titles.
God, that's unbelievable. There you go, NFL true or false. We're graded again next Tuesday, and we'll pick some new ones every Tuesday at 1:30. Let's continue our Pac-12 preview. Todd Husak is color analyst for Stanford. What's the Cardinal going to be like this year, man? A lot of question marks about David Shaw's team. They're replacing a bunch of guys transferred. How do they fare in the Pac-12 North, and what does he think about that first game against Oregon in Eugene? Todd Husak next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, Beaverton, Aloha Division, Vancouver. They're all up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com, or stop by one of the locations today. We're continuing with the Crunch Time Pac-12 preview. I love it, man, as we're a couple of days, less than 2 weeks away from the Pac-12 beginning. Oregon's first game will be against Stanford, a team that we could see it going either way for them this year. And joining us now to preview them and talk about them, Todd Husak, former quarterback, color commentator for Stanford football. You can give him a follow on Twitter, at Todd. Husak. Todd, thanks so much for the time today, man. We appreciate it. I'll just start. We previewed Cal yesterday, and it was kind of eye-opening to get a glimpse of what their last couple of months have been like and the limited numbers of practices and gatherings and all that kind of stuff. Where is Stanford at as of now in your mind, now that we're, a week and a half away from beginning in terms of being prepared to start a season?
Well, it's really tough to say. They've gone the entire offseason with basically no practices and summer no workouts, and even when camp was supposed to start in late July and early August, many of the players were home, including quarterback Davis Mills. So, and you're talking over the course of that 6-8 months, thousands of repetitions that you're going to get to get ready for this season, and then the training, and you hope that everybody is home doing the right things. But there's a lot to be said for guys getting reps together, especially with a young quarterback in Davis Mills, who just took over as the starter late last season. You'd love to see a full offseason, him getting repetitions with his receivers, his running backs, his offensive line, making sure everybody's on the same page. Now, I think they've been intense the last couple weeks getting ready. So will they be 100%? No, just from the lack of reps. But I think they'll be ready. David Shaw has a good plan, and there's enough experience up front and with the skill position players that they should be ready fairly quickly.
Well, and Todd, I think last year was such an eye-opening season for a lot of people that, we've respected long up here, and I think all over the conference what David Shaw's been able to do. You fill in for Jim Harbaugh, and instantly people go, well, how legit is this David Shaw guy? And a few years later, he's still winning 10 games, 12 games, 9 games. It's consistent. Last year, they go 4-8. I know they had a bit of an injury bug. How do you – How do you explain what last year was for Stanford, where it went truly wrong for them? And some people kind of rushing into the conclusion, is this going to be Stanford now? Do they come falling down from the top of the Pac-12 North? And in that conversation, kind of the middle of the conference, what did you make of last season and kind of just where they're at as a program?
Injuries were a big part of it. And as the announcer now for 14 seasons, the last two seasons, we've never seen anything like the number of injuries. They lost five offensive linemen for the season, including a number early in the year, and their best one in Walker Little. Now, Walker Little decided to go pro, so he is out. But, if you think of Stanford, you think a dominant offensive line, a solid run game, some play-action passing, but you control the clock, you're good on third downs, you're good in the red zone. Injuries were part of it, but they were not good on third downs. In fact, they were very bad. They were not good in the red zone. In fact, they were very bad. So, and they did not run the ball effectively at all. And that's a couple years in a row now where Stanford has not been able to get the run going. And in fact, 2 years ago with Bryce Love, the returning Heisman winner and experienced offensive line, you thought, this could be the year where they really break out, and it was awful. So I think Stanford has to get back to what they have done in the past, and that's control the ball on the ground. They have some good young running backs, and again, an experienced offensive line anchored by Drew Dahlman, who's now a four-year starter at center. And they have young guys who got some experience last year because of all the injuries up front. I think they have one of the best core of wide receivers, not just in the conference. I think if these guys continue to get better, you can talk about them having one of the best wide receiver cores in the country. So, does Stanford, I think that's the big question. Does Stanford sort of take that because of their personnel? Do they take that and let's work the pass game? And we saw Davis Mills break the school record for passing in a single game last year. Does Stanford sort of take that cue and become a pass first offense and try to get some big plays in the run game? That will be, I think, the question early in the season, something I'll be looking for.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch these teams and their offenses continue to evolve depending on the talent that the skill positions that they have. Todd Husak, our guest, color commentator, former Stanford quarterback. You can give him a follow on Twitter at Todd Husak. On the defensive side of the ball, we've always known that they've been good over there, going back to the Jim Harbaugh days and most of the time over these last handful of years. What are we expecting defensively? And then if I remember correctly, in the offseason, it felt like a number of guys had transferred away that were either going to be, a part of the two deep on that defense. How are they going to be on that side of the ball? And then what do you make of some of the guys that were transferring out of the program earlier this offseason?
Yeah, great question. They're going to be thin up front. You go back to when Stanford was a top five, top 10 team, which wasn't that long ago. They could run the ball and they could get to the quarterback. And those were two things that got them a lot of wins in tough games. They were able to grind down the clock and then on the defensive side, get to the QB, force some bad mistakes, and get the ball back. Last year, their front seven was very thin. They got injured, dinged up, and they're not explosive. They don't have that pass rusher who can get to the quarterback. They're thinking Thomas Booker could be the guy this year. He's got some experience. He looks the part. He looks good getting off the bus. They lost their best defender in Paulson Adebo, who decided to go pro, All-American type player. So if they cannot get a pass rush, I think that young secondary could get exposed. And this is it's a tough conference if you can't force a quarterback off his spot or get to him and force quick decisions. So I think Stanford's going to have to outscore some teams, and that's really what they've had to do the last couple of years. Stanford has not been as solid on defense. And back to your second part of the question, what's with the transfers? That's something a lot of people around the program are asking. Guys who were expected to contribute, some guys expected to be potential starters, especially on that defensive front, leaving the program. And that's, I've been around Stanford for a long time. Very, very few players ever left early for the draft. Now that's happened a little bit more recently because they just have great players, guys like Andrew Luck or Christian McCaffrey. Some guys up front have decided to leave early, but nobody ever transferred. That the degree was so valuable that you figured, guys would just continue to play their careers, get the degree and go on if football wasn't in their future. But, there were, I think at one point, 15 players in the transfer portal, which is mind-blowing for somebody who's been around Stanford so long and seeing all the success and the guys who climb the depth chart and work hard and get their shot. So I don't know. It's certainly disturbing. Now, David Shaw, I trust him, and he seems to have things under control, but certainly not a good sign when you're losing players, you have so many injuries, And Stanford has not fielded a full roster. They have extra scholarships from the last few years that they have not handed out. So you're talking, the depth that Stanford has had for so many years, where they have great frontline players and they recruit well and bring guys up the ranks. It hasn't been that way for the last couple seasons. So, you know, you'd like to say 4-8 was an aberration. This year, we'll see. I think this is an important year for Stanford. Do they take a step forward and make up for, I think, the big step backwards they've taken the last 2 years, or does this downward trend continue?
Well, Todd, you mentioned kind of being thin up front defensively. And then, look, I think there's an element with Stanford when you talk about them with the other Pac-12 schools. There's just an element for me of the kind of person they're looking for that can not only qualify for the academic side of things, but just the character. Do you think it's maybe just been a miss? Like some of the kids they've offered some scholarships to that have come in, you talk about kind of maybe a weaker-ish front seven, and we'll have to wait and see on that. But for maybe their slide defensively or anywhere else on the roster that you see, do you think it's maybe just with Stanford sometimes, and largely they haven't had this problem under David Shaw or Harbaugh, but sometimes at a school like Stanford, there's a bit of a calculated risk because you need the brightest of the bright to be able to qualify academically and join your team. They might be hitting on some of these guys and maybe just not living up to quite what the coaching staff thought they would be when they get them to their facility.
I think that's part of it. And listen, every school has misses. Alabama has kids that don't pan out. But I think Stanford, because of, you know, there's a very limited number of players in the country that Stanford can just recruit, let alone ones that can get into school. So instead of the ability to recruit 100,000 kids from the get-go, you're really down to maybe 500 or 400 or less than that. And so I think what Jim Harbaugh did a great job of when he came was he had to convince players to come to Stanford, a program that had not been successful, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years in a row. And he got them to that point, and he hit on some two-star kids, guys like Trent Murphy and Ben Gardner, and you know, he brought in Andrew Luck, which I think changed the program as much as anybody. But David Shaw now, he took over a program that has been good consistently. And if you ask a high school senior, hey, who you know, what do you think of Stanford? Hey, they're a top 10 football team, let alone university. And so I think that's where it's critical that Stanford has to stay on top and relevant. It wasn't that long ago where I was a coach there. I was a graduate assistant sending letters to kids in parts of the country. They had no idea where Stanford was, let alone what Stanford was. So, wow. You know, it could be an uphill battle if they don't maintain that, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in a row of contending and being on national television and being on College Game Day. I think they were on College Game Day featured, I think, 3 or 4 times, you know, in consecutive seasons. So it's, they need to get back to that. And part of it, I think a big part of it is getting the players, right? Jesse's and the Joes or X's and O's. I think it takes both. But Stanford needs some more of those sort of program changing guys over the next few years.
Yeah. Great insight. Todd Husak, former Stanford quarterback. He's their color commentator. Go give him a follow on Twitter at Todd Husak as Oregon and Stanford. That's the first game of the year, and it's going to be here before we know it. Todd, thanks so much for the time today, man. We really appreciate it. We'd love to catch up here again in, I don't know, maybe 10 days as we start previewing game number one up at Autzen Stadium.
Sounds good, guys. Anytime.
There you go. Todd Husak, former Stanford quarterback.
Pretty eye-opening stuff there.
It is. I remember that being a story like that. It feels like it was 5 years ago because it was pre-COVID. But if you go back to kind of January, February at the tail of last season ending and the kind of going into the offseason, dude, they had so many guys transfer away. Guys that were starting offensive linemen, starting like too deep. Not like, hey, I'm fourth string. I can't make my way up the depth chart. Like guys that were playing. That just fleed away from the program. It was really weird.
It's an odd thing to see and to know they have scholarships available that they're not utilizing. That's the yikes. You don't want to hear about that. And look, David Shaw's a great coach. He could prove all of us wrong in their first game against the Ducks. It's a little troubling. I kind of, you know, the vibe I got from Todd there is a little troubling what you're seeing, and you just hope it's not the start of a trend if you're a Stanford fan, and maybe it's a one-off.
Hope it's a one-off. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Starting tomorrow through Saturday, they're running a $1 enrollment on any membership and a $25 gift card. So today through Saturday, $1 to enroll and a $25 gift card. Awesome deal. Go check them out, crunch.com, or stop by one of the locations. We got a lot to get to in the final hour. The mail sack is filling up. It's a good one today, boys. We get to that coming up at 2:15. Keep your questions coming at 503-250-1080. What else do we got to get into? I'm going to get into players leaving a program early in college football. College game day is doing something that I wonder if anybody's going to actually care about when it happens. And then what the hell's going on with Cam Newton? Let's start the final hour there. As the last 2 weeks have not been pretty, is this it for Cam Newton? Load a final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fam.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.